Delta Brass Stocks, good morning.
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 Yeah. Yes, Peter. Morning, Peter.
How are you doing?
Yes, I'm good. And you?
Great. I'm doing well.
Yeah. I'm a Rastafarian, yes. But the topic, same, two topics, same quickly speaking on is the pensions. And today is supposed to be, was always supposed to be open today to distribute the pensions. And so far, none is out there yet. And we only got one more day before the weekend. Yes, so I wonder what happened. That is
okay.
Delayed so slow.
Mm-hmm.
And the next topic, why Babel science, the science and labs can't produce a vaccine themselves or go to herbal medicine as well as they're doing with the marijuana.
What was the third point, sir?
How
what's the third point?
I want to know why the science here don't go to medicine for the COVID herbal medicine as well as the dealing with the marijuana, medicinal marijuana.
Mm-hmm.
That's the point they want to ask.
So you're asking me about what? Repeat the question.
I want to know why they can't seek the medicinal properties for other herbs for the COVID.
So you are convinced that there is a medicinal benefit to cannabis for COVID? You're saying that there is not a medicinal benefit?
Not from cannabis. I mean other herbs.
Okay. I don't know. Sir, look, this is the situation. I was trying to find the actual figure here, but my understanding is that the government of the United Kingdom, as well as the European Union governments, paid what they describe as, I think it's something like $250 million, and this would be million euros, to these various drug agencies to produce and research and develop the vaccines that we're seeing now. Last I checked, the budget for Barbados annually was something like $1 billion. So the idea that Barbados would be in a position to independently develop vaccine is something that I think is farcical. I thought it was amusing when Paul Gibson said it, and I think that it is perhaps something that we should not entertain. The reality is that we do not have the resources to research and develop vaccines like this. We may very well be able to make some under license. That's a different kind of conversation. But the idea of us going in this entrepreneurial way and just making vaccines is something that I really don't know that it is a conversation that can be entertained now, because I don't believe that we have the resources to do it, quite frankly. As far as the medicinal thing, perhaps you need to ask somebody else about that. I don't know about no medicinal remedies and whatnot. I know about no Circe Bush and them kind of thing. When I have a headache, I usually take a Panadol. That is how I operate. But certainly if there are people who are familiar with the natural remedies, I would encourage them to consult them as much or as little as they need to. However, I really can't give any advice in that regard. All right, sir. Thanks a lot for calling. And we will take another call and say good morning and welcome to Down to Brass Stacks.
Hello.
Good morning, ma'am. How are you doing?
I'm good. You overseas?
Mm-hmm. I am, yes.
Oh, okay. You said technology. You sound like you're right next door to me.
Lovely.
Yeah, Peter. I ain't talking about the Rasta situation, but let me just put a little plug here. When you read all your reaction was and everything, I tend to disagree with you. You know, I disagree with you sometimes. Sometimes I agree with you. The part where you say that, correct me if I'm wrong, going on to the end of your presentation, that if they want to mix in society, something like you say, that it should happen.
Mm-hmm.
Right.
But.
Will you say something similar to, like, the law should get involved, wasn't it, to keep them away from society? Are you going wrong?
But it already does, ma'am. It already does.
But listen, right? I don't like that part because we don't know who's taking it, right? And what I figure myself that who has already taken it will be protected. And Fossey said if majority take it, we will have what they call it herd immunity or something like that. So, as we said, if they don't want to take it, they don't want to take it. That is their right. Mm-hmm. And also, what happened, right, is like identifying of a Rasta. We know who they are. So, therefore, if a Muslim take it, if I don't take it, a Christian or whatever don't take it, nobody know, but it's like we'll be pinpointing these persons, right, if we go into it like that. So that to identify, oh, Rasta's ain't taking it. It would become like a general thing, which is not good for them. See? Right.
So ma'am, let me just give you my quick response, right? Mm. And the point I was making is that I don't know whether my sister Keturah Bab will take it or not. She's Rastafarian. Mm. The point is that if she decides on the basis of her religion not to take the vaccine, and Caswell Franklin, who to the best of my knowledge is a Christian, has also publicly stated that he is not taking it.
Right.
I am saying that society should not treat to Cecilia Bab any differently than it treats to Caswell Franklin. Because my point is that if it is that there comes a point in time, and let's be clear, ma'am, that there is not that case now, right? Mm. If, for example, you attempt to go to Israel, okay? The Israeli government has said they have reached herd immunity, and they are taking a position that they're going to introduce what they call a vaccine passport. If you have the vaccine, you can come in. If you don't have it, you can't come in. The point I am making is that if a position like that is taken by Barbados that says we will not allow someone in without the vaccine, I do not believe that Sister Bab should be treated any different to Caswell Franklin when they get to the border. Because if we have a rule that says a person is to be treated in a particular way if they don't take the vaccine, then I think that rule should be across the board. But ma'am, let's be clear. The conversation to me has more to do with immunization in a more general sense, right? I have in front of me my vaccination card from 1972, okay? I was born in 1968. My vaccination card from 1972, signed by the sister at the Emoore Health Center, who ironically was my mother. Frank Ramsey was the doctor in charge. And it is stamped saying that I am immunized for school entry. And that was in 1972. And I had all of the vaccinations that I talked about. I had them, which is measles, mumps, rubella, etc. Now, the point I am making is that the standard for entering school in 1972 was that I had all of these vaccinations, BCG, the measles, etc. The point I am making, ma'am, is that there's no religious identifier there. There is a public health identifier that says a child wanted to go into school has to have these vaccinations, whether that child be Hindu, Muslim, Rastafarian, or otherwise. Now, if a Rastafarian says, on religious reasons, I do not want to take those vaccinations, and the minister determines in his judgment that that child is a threat to everyone else in the school, then that child is denied entry to school. If the minister believes that that child can go into school, notwithstanding not having the vaccinations, this is not a threat, then so be it, because the laws of Barbados allow for that. But the point I'm making is that we need to be clear that these are public health regulations. COVID is not yet to that stage. However, ma'am, I can assure you that they will come a time, that it will be that case. Years ago, I went to Peru, right? Before I could board the plane, I was asked to produce a yellow fever certificate. I produced a yellow fever certificate and I went. There were people who didn't have it and they couldn't go in, because a requirement for going in is that you have had a yellow fever vaccination. If you are opposed to taking a yellow fever vaccination, then you just don't go to Peru. It's as simple as that. Brazil is the same thing. So let's not behave as though these things are anything new and different. The reality is that immunization is a requirement for participation in certain activities. And if you don't want to immunize, you have a right to do so. However, you cannot complain when you're subsequently told you can't get involved in that. I'm going to make a proposal today, ma'am. And I'm using this opportunity while speaking to you to do so, right? You've ever been to Mia's party at Crop Over? Oh, I'm sorry. We have to break and go to the Minister of Home Affairs who wants to make an intervention. Minister Abrams, good morning, sir.
Hi, Peter. I was actually anxiously waiting to hear if the lady had ever been to the Prime Minister's party.
I should have said, or whether they went to yours.
Yeah, Peter. We've been following the situation at the post offices as we prepare for the opening today. I want to assure the public of Barbados that we put every measure possible in place to try to ease the anticipated congestion at the post offices. A number of people have been contacting us and circulating pictures concerned about the length of the lines outside some of the post offices and suggesting it reflects on the arrangements, but that is not the case. I myself went on to the Welsh post office to see what was going on. There was a significant line outside. I accept that. Some of the people indicated that they were there well before the post office opened, so the post office itself opened to a lot of people outside. And I went in to try to find out if anything else needed to be done to ease the pressure. And it then became clear what is happening. What is happening is that people are coming to cash their pension checks, but they're also coming to pay a lot of their bills with their pension checks. So we can ease the lines by just cashing the pension checks alone and denying the bill paying service. But I spoke to probably over 50 people outside, all of whom indicated they wanted to make this trip once. They wanted to cash their checks, pay their bills, do everything, and then forget about that for about a month. So it is the act of the post office facilitating the payment of the bills that is causing the backup. It cannot be done any faster. Most of the post offices have the full cashier complement there, so all of the windows are staffed. There are people in the back office also assisting with sorting the money and trying to expedite that. But the payment of the bills takes as long as it takes. I stood up there and watched one lady pay about 7 bills. Right? And, I mean, the post office is open. We are not open today and tomorrow only, as some people are suggesting, which might be leading to some of the panic. The post office will be open for its services next week as well. So if you don't want to go in the line today, then there's no rush. You can actually come back next week and have the same service.
Sorry. Can we get him back, Dennis? All right. We're gonna see if we can get Minister Abrams back, but I think he sufficiently well made the point that, look, if you're having pressure and there are people who are messaged to say that the lines in the post office are ridiculous, the issue, he said, is one of people not only cashing checks but paying bills, and it's taking a long time in order to process all of those services. The situation is one that can't really be managed any better. However, you can decline to go in the line today and you can go back on Monday. Because the post office will open on Monday as normal. So you do have that option. I do have a question, though, for Minister Abrams. I'm not sure if he is able to listen, but one of the callers, Curtis, is asking about the language used in this term stay-at-home order, in this weekend stay-at-home order. And he notes that the language is very clear that we are confined to our home as opposed to being told to remain in the curtilage of your residence. And he is asking for an explanation. I think a number of people would like to understand whether there is a difference between the language that was used by Minister Bradshaw in the initial shutdown that said we are confined to our curtilage, which means we can go outside and we can run around in the yard, play with the dogs, and shout at the neighbor, as opposed to the language which is being used now, which is that we are supposed to stop in your house or remain at home. So that is the difference. You're back there, Minister Abrams?
Yes, I am. Yes, I am.
Right. You haven't phone issues, sir?
I think it may be you, but we're back on now.
I don't know if you were able to hear the question that was being asked, because I think that you've explained pretty well the situation with the post office. And you made it clear that it will be open on Monday. So people, if they want to defer, they can go on Monday. But I was asking you about the language of this weekend stay-at-home order. I know you're not the Attorney General, but you are an attorney at law of some note. And I believe you can explain to us the difference between the language used in the first confinement, which is you are to remain in the curtilage of your residence, as distinct from the confines of your home, which we're being told on this occasion. Is there a difference, sir?
Peter, realistically, we want people to stay at home, right? I mean, if you have a yard, Peter, and you go in your yard, then nobody's going to come in your yard and arrest you for that. But we want people to understand that, don't worry about the language. The intent of this is to stay at home. Don't open the gate and go outside. Don't go down the road. Don't stretch curtilage or confines of home or residence to include neighbor or the shop down the road. The impact and the intent of this is to impress upon Barbadians the need to stay home, interact with the members of your household and nobody else.
Okay. All right. I think that pretty much explains it. I'm happy with that explanation. Sure.
Allow me just to sign off with this, Peter, because even while talking to you, I'm still getting the messages about the lines. People can opt if the line is too long for you and you do not need as an imperative to have your check cashed today, then come back next week. The lines are going to be shorter. The post office staff is processing as fast as they can. But that speed is determined by the transactions that the individual consumers and customers want to carry out. We cannot move any faster, and there's nothing else that we can put in place to ease it. If 100 people turn up around the same time, you will get a line, and there's nothing that we can do about it. But we're trying.
Okay. Minister, last question, and I promise that you can go after this time. Someone is asking about the registration department in respect of registering birth of children. If you're unable to access those services for the time being, is it a problem? Because I think you have a, normally there's a period of time you have to register a child that was born, no?
What I will do, Peter, for you, I don't see it as going to be a problem. There's some force majeure situations and emergency situations tend to trump what the normal law and normal time frames are. If the government has shut down the country for a certain period and your time frame expires in there, it cannot be held against you. But what I will do is have that addressed and have that put out in either a public notice or circulated so that everybody can have the benefit of that answer.
Okay. All right. Thank you very much. Lady says she's been calling and she can't get through, so I'm sure that she'll be happy to hear that information. But like you, I would have thought that in a situation where you do not have a choice, the inability to register a child cannot be held against you. So I appreciate very much your willingness to do that. Okay, sir. Thank you very much. I appreciate your intervention in this matter. Dennis, is the lady still there? Are you there, ma'am? Okay, she's gone. Right. The point I was making to her by asking her about Mia's party, and I must tell you that it is certainly one of the best crop over parties imaginable. Food and drink in abundance. I mean, she barbecues a whole pig. There was no party this year, and I was going to make a suggestion that she has one for this Christmas, this crop over. And she makes the admission free for people who have had the COVID vaccination. Now, that is called a carrot. So in other words, all like Miso who are anxious to have the vaccination, are anxious to go to a party, would be able to go to her party and go for free and eat the barbecued pig. Or not eat the barbecued pig as the case may be. For those of you who are uncomfortable vaccinating, then you just wouldn't go to the party. The United Kingdom is talking about a range of policies currently. Already, the Israelis have a policy where they have what is called a COVID passport. So to come into Israel, the idea is that you should have you should be COVID immunized. And if you're not COVID immunized, of course, you can't go. The United Kingdom is talking about a similar program where they're saying we will do a combination of things. One of them is that we will force people who are coming into the UK to be vaccinated before arriving and have documentation in that regard, similar to what is done with yellow fever. And we would also have carrots in which persons would be told, you know, there are certain activities that you can do even now, like Mia's party, where if you are COVID vaccinated, you can go and you can be with other like-minded person who have been vaccinated, because there is no risk to public health if all of you are associated together. You can go, you can fat your party and drink or whatnot. So there's a mix of policies that is currently being contemplated where you would use the carrot and the stick. Here in France, there's a similar conversation taking place. Of course, the French are big on fundamental rights, so there is going to be some resistance to it. But already there is talk about using a combination of policies that said people coming in had to be vaccinated, and certainly to go to certain activities, like if you want to go to a mall and whatnot, and you can produce documentation saying you've been immunized, then there will be greater freedom for you in that regard, because the understanding is that there is no threat to be posed if you have all immunized people together. That's the point I was making when I was trying to tell her about the party. We have a combination of carrots and sticks. So it's not that you're trying to say to anyone, we punish you, but we're trying to facilitate a process where we get to a level of immunity. Lady is telling me on the chat, only a year ago, I went to the United States and there was a chickenpox outbreak. Sorry, 2 years ago, there was a chickenpox outbreak, and parents at one school were told they had to get the vaccine or else they could not go to school. I don't see the problem. I had to take the vaccine in 1984 in order to go into the United States. I was 10 years old. And I personally, as I said last week on the program, I had my chickenpox vaccination about 5 or 6 years ago in the arm. That was administered by the same mother that gave me the MIR and all those things in 1972, who is 89 years old today. Down to brass tacks. Good morning.
Good morning, Peter.
Morning, sir. How are you doing?
I'm pretty good. What about yourself?
Good. Man, I'm good. I'm good.
Good. Glad to hear. Peter, yeah. You know, we don't need to be constantly impressing upon the people of this country about the dangers of COVID-19. I mean, it's becoming now like a... I don't even know the word to describe how our people are behaving. And all I can say about that is that we need to let the people do as they like if they want to. Because even the vaccine, Peter, there's no mandatory way for people to take the vaccine. I may be slipping here because I'm being sidetracked. But if people don't want the vaccine, it's simple. Who wants
the vaccine, take it?
Go ahead and take it. Who don't want it, do it for it.
Were told that you could go to a fair, if you took the vaccine, you would take it and go to the fair?
If I was told I could
take it and go to a fair, no. Would you take it and go to the fair?
Peter, not at all.
Oh, you don't go to fairs?
I used to, but I don't party anymore, Peter.
Okay.
But even if I had to take the vaccine and go to a fair, I ain't going to a fair. In this COVID period, full stop. Not so long COVID around.
But sir, if everybody had the FET vaccinated, you got a problem.
Ain't going. So long COVID, ain't going.
You're going. All right, but that
no crowd.
All
right. Now, why I really want to speak to you today, Peter, that's my main reason of calling you, about politics. Because I don't want to get caught up in a fortune about the COVID anymore. I'm tired with it. Now, just a couple of days ago, Peter, I heard on Starcom Network an item coming from Verla de Pisa, the president of the Democratic Labour Party. And she was speaking about the way the government is handling the pandemic. And you know, Verla went on to say, Peter, that if indeed there was a robust opposition, there would be every justification for a vote of no confidence. I want to listen carefully. A vote of no confidence against Prime Minister Marley. And as I said, she was speaking on the way the pandemic is being handled by this present administration.
All right, sir, we're going to have to break to go to the press conference. So if you stick around, we can talk some politics after we come back. Feel free to stay on the line.